and welcome to the ICIS Chemicals Podcast. I'm Claire Pennington, shipping editor here in London, and I've been spending much of August looking at how a new rule from the World Maritime Organization is shaking up different industries around the world. Today, we are in for a special treat, as I've managed to snag some of our esteemed analysts, Michael Connolly and AJ Palmer, to talk to us about the rule, which will mean any fuel used in the shipping industry will have to be 0.5% sulfur or below, as opposed to the current 3.5% limit. Welcome, AJ and Mike.
Thank you.
You both have experience in working in refineries as well as analysts, so you're in a perfect position to tell us a little bit about new fuels as well as IMO impacts on other oil products.
Hi, my name's Michael Connolly. I've been an analyst with ICIS for the last year and a half, and before that I've been working in consulting for 10 years looking at the technical aspects of refining, and prior to that I worked for 10 years previously within refineries for a number of refineries within Australia.
I'm AJ, so I've been working for ICIS for around a year. And I have a similar background to Mike, but far less experience. Worked as a chemical engineer like Mike on refining, and then worked in the planning department, actually blending these fuels and making these fuels as well.
So let's start with the new and existing fuels for shipping. What already exists, and what are the new fuels being made for ships to meet this new rule?
Well, currently there's two broad categories which shipping fuels fit in: distillate fuels and residual-based fuels. Distillate fuels currently make up 15 to 20% of the market in liquid bunkers, and residual fuels make up about 80 to 85% of the market. Now, typically, the distillate fuels are used for making the 0.5% sulfur specification fuel, and the rest of the world uses typically a 3.5% sulfur residual-based fuel oil. Now, as of 1st of January 2020, the 3.5% fuel oil area, the open seas, is moving down to this 0.5 specification. That residual fuel is difficult to make at that level. So what we're going to see is a change where we'll see an increase in the amount of distillate fuels being used, where typically residual fuels have been used, just to meet the requirement of demand for that amount of low sulfur material. So in our estimates, we see a rise from about 15 to 20% distillate-based material in the market to around 50 to 60% distillate-based material in the market, which obviously the corresponding shrink in the residual amount, about 40 to 50% from its level of 80 to 85. What we're also expecting is that the high sulfur fuel oil being used in the scrub ships only makes up about 10 to 20% of that residual market, whereas today the high sulfur can be any of those components in the market. So it's a real dramatic change for what is happening in that residual-based fuel part of the market.
Okay. One of the things I'd heard when I went to a conference recently is somebody was saying that they didn't see it as a new product at all. They just saw it as a blend of what already exists. And other people are marketing it as a new product. Actually, is it?
So I think both are correct. It is a new product, but it is a blend. For some sites around the world, fuel oil is simply a residual component, something like atmospheric residue or vacuum residue, maybe with one other component to modify the viscosity, but very simple blend. For many sites, it's already a complicated mixture of residuals, distillates, in varying ratios to make the various specifications for marine fuel. This is an evolution forward in that where we're controlling the sulfur to a much tighter level, so it's more likely that most sites will need to make a blend, though it's less likely that we'll have those simple sites that are able to make it out of one or two components. Mm-hmm. So in essence, both are correct. But in reality, it is a new product because it is such a step change in the specification from 3.5% to 0.5% that really it is a step change in complexity, more difficult to make.
I think that's something that quite a few people will be asking themselves, especially if they're not directly involved in shipping and that part of the market. So I wonder what the potential technical problems with the fuel could be for shippers. From your perspective, you know, as a refiner and stuff, I think previously we've spoken about potential problems with mixing and things like that.
There is a number of potential problems, you know, issues like lubrication, etc. But the biggest problem that seems to stand out in most people's mind is the issue of stability, which comes with the mixing of different types of fuel oil. So if, dare I say it, we step back a tiny bit to the chemistry.
Yeah.
There's a certain molecule called N-asphaltene that is contained within fuel oil, and this molecule is held in suspension in, let's say, for want of a simpler term, within the mixture. Now, unless the right other components are around that N-asphaltene, it's quite easy for that N-asphaltene to drop out of solution and make a solid. And that then has implications within the engine for deposits and running issues on the engine, obviously all in a negative way. Now, refiners are smart, and so they make their fuel so it is stable. They make the right mixtures to go with these H14s to keep them from dropping out of solution. Now, it typically requires a molecule called an aromatic be mixed with it to keep it in solution, which comes from blending typically cracked gas oils, things like light cycle oil, gas oil. So these materials are going to be usually blended with these asphaltines to keep them in solution. As I said before, each refiner has different blends for making their different fuel oils, and this blend complexity is going to go up in the future. So what we might see post-IMO is that some refiners are blending a lot of straight-run gas oils into their fuel oil component to get the sulfur down. This doesn't have the same effect of keeping those asphaltines from precipitating out of the mixture. Now that will be fine in their own blend because they'll make sure their blend is stable. But if you mix that blend with, say, some material that's residual in your tanks that has a lot of asphaltines, together that combined mixture could result in that asphaltine dropping out and forming a precipitation. So that's how people are worried about this mixing aspect of mixing heel material or a half full tank with another fuel oil that's made from different chemistry that's incompatible.
Now I understand why if you're shipping transatlantically, if you can't get the same fuel in the US Gulf as you might be able to in Rotterdam, then you might not be thinking about that route in the same way, perhaps. And I mean, you have to carry extra fuel as well and all that stuff if there's a danger of that happening. And from what I'm hearing as well, a lot of the people in the oil refining industry putting a little bit of pressure on the shipping industry to do those tests themselves because it's their risk. Who can recommend or who can guarantee what?
So the testing here is quite specific to do this testing, and it is very difficult because you would have to test such a wide range of material to know fuel oil A is compatible with fuel oil B and C, depending on all the different ports you go to. And even each blend varies a little bit every time. This is why there's so much concern around the issue. Most people are aware of it and will try and use similar suppliers, speak to their suppliers and be in conjunction. So I'm sure there will be issues out there, but hopefully it will not be as severe as people are worried about.
I guess a lot of it will depend on really how much people actually use this product in the end. AJ, actually, we could ask you a bit about that. Have you had a look at these prices and these supply demands? And I wondered what relationship that has with the refinery price.
Yeah, so we do have a very good sense, certainly on the demand side. In the general perspective, very low sulfur fuel oil. It's 0.5% sulfur fuel oil. Demand for that will skyrocket because it's a brand new product. Same for marine gas oil as well. We expect the demand for that to increase substantially as well. And obviously, consequently, high sulfur fuel oil demand will collapse significantly. In terms of general proportions, we're looking at, as Mike has already said in the past, 80 to 85% historically is the high sulfur fuel oil has taken up about 80 to 85% of the bunker fuels market in the past. That will really collapse to very low, few, almost single digit sort of percentages, even beginning next year, as early as next year. MGO will account for over 50% of demand going into the future. We also then anticipate the rest will then come for very low sulfur fuel oil. As time goes on, things will improve. The situation will improve for high sulfur fuel oil as more scrubbers are implemented into ships over the years, because it does take up to a year in some cases to implement scrubbers. And so demand for high sulfur fuel oil will eventually recover. But yeah, it really will be MGO, marine gas oil, that's the real kind of big products. In terms of very low sulfur fuel oil, we already have seen that prices are being released. There's futures prices out there already, and also for marine gas oil as well. Prices for those are quite high, especially for, let's take very low sulfur fuel oil, is well over $100 per ton higher than high sulfur fuel oil. Even now, we think it may be a slight overshoot right now just because not a huge number of refineries are producing it yet, and there will be some demand from shipping companies to trial this new product in their ships as well. So there's a slight supply and demand imbalance which is probably pushing the prices up quite high right now. That should recover and rebalance later on.
In terms of the supply, looking at it from a shipping perspective, I found it quite difficult unless you're actually inside the industry get information on what the supply is actually going to even be. And it seems to me like the oil industry has actually kept its cards quite close to its chest because there are different people taking different risks here, and who's going to get the lion's share of the margins out of this and who's going to suffer the costs, I guess, if those things happen. And I just wondered a little bit about whether you've come across that, whether you've come across any difficulty in getting a sense of what the production volumes are actually going to be.
Supply is always that bit more difficult to get. You're exactly right that the refineries are keeping that information to themselves. They generally do that for a lot of products anyway, because that is really dependent upon their margins, and that is really quite crucial information, economic information for their businesses. So they do keep those cards quite close to their chest. You can generally see which refineries are really going to benefit the most overall, though, from this, and which refineries are going to produce which type of product. We know that there are certain processes which will mean that certain refineries can really gain economically from this new implementation of this new specification. So, for example, residue desulfurization processes, they're exactly what refineries need in this particular scenario. They can desulfurize their residue and produce this very low sulfur fuel oil for very low cost and still sell it for this high price that I'm talking about before. Refineries which are very simple and produce a high amount of residue, a high amount of fuel oil, and don't have desulfurization capabilities, they will not be so economically well off as a result of this. In fact, it will be a big downside for them, because the price of high sulfur fuel oil is expected to decrease over time, and that will mean that will really cut into their margins overall.
So overall, actually, the in terms of the individual refinery, the results could be much more extreme than are seen more widely in the market, and that's why we're talking to you two, because you understand refineries. So
exactly that, right?
Just going from that, I don't know which of you would like to answer this. Overall, you know, in Europe as well, I wondered if there are any challenges we face in Europe because of the particular demand and supply mix that we have. I know we get a lot of, we get some products from Russia. We also want to sell a lot of our gasoline because we're long there. So yeah, I wonder if we could talk about what this might mean for Europe.
I'll start off with that.
Thanks, Mike.
So for Europe, it could be a little bit challenging on the residual market. I mean, Europe does take in a lot of crude from Russia, which is relatively high sulfur, and the fuel oil produced directly from that crude, it is not great for making bunker fuel at 0.5%. It's great for making bunker fuel at 3.5%. So refiners who use that sort of crude have two choices. They either needed to invest money, a lot of money, to build upgrading units, which we haven't seen a lot of within Europe, if any, or they need to buy different crudes, which are sweeter crudes, which are more expensive. So either way, they went down that route. It's going to cost them more to produce that fuel. So selling at the same price would cut into their margin, so obviously they're going to want to sell it at the higher price. Or not make it, right? A refiner is not obliged to make any specific products. It makes what is economically attractive. So there are other routes for people to use this fuel oil. They can, small percentages, they can turn into things like bitumen, but they can sell it on the feedstock markets globally. They can look for power producers that are still prepared to take high sulfur fuel oil into power plants. They will look for a wide range of these options, as well as trying to make what they can of low sulfur fuel oil.
And yeah, actually, I wonder, so are we in a worse position, for example, I mean, when I say we, is Europe in a worse position than perhaps refiners in the United States, you know, refiners in the Middle East?
So it's a mixed situation, because it does vary refinery by refinery, but on average, a European refinery is less complex than an American refinery. So American refineries, on average, have a lower fuel oil yield, so they are just less exposed to this market, whereas European refineries have a higher fuel oil yield. When it comes to the Middle East, it's a bit of a mixed bag depending on the location.
Upstream, I wondered if this has had any impact on the prices of the different crudes at this stage that you've noticed.
Right now, it's not going to have too much of an effect overall yet. In the next few months, we do anticipate that it will, and it will actually be the driver of crude oil prices over the next few months. Specifically, we anticipate that there will be a higher demand for, or higher price, sorry, for light and sweet crudes, light and sweet, and even medium crudes as well, medium density and medium sulfur crudes, because those simple refineries require these types of crudes to be able to make very low sulfur fuel oil. They simply cannot make this stuff without having that type of crude in there. Crude oil benchmarks such as Brent and WTI, we do anticipate that those prices will increase towards the end of the year and should hold their value as well, continue a slight increase in towards the in the first few months of 2020. What we do also anticipate is that heavy crude prices, conversely, will begin to the spread between low sulfur and high sulfur crudes will widen somewhat. The degree at which this will widen will really depend more on what's happening in the world oil markets in general. We have the OPEC Plus cuts. They represent generally very heavy crudes, and so they've been cutting their production, which has buoyed their prices actually quite a lot. And if they continue to cut quite deeply, as Saudi is more recently saying that they're planning to do, then that spread that is wide, that we anticipate to widen, should close somewhat. We still anticipate some widening in the spread, but just not as much of a widening.
And I imagine sanctions also play into that, you know, with the Venezuela and Iran.
Venezuela and Iran have had a huge, huge impact. They have combined between them, you're talking millions of barrels per day of production losses overall, which is now no longer on the oil market. That's had a huge impact. So all of these things are coming into play over the next few months. It'll be interesting to see.
That's why I keep seeing the word volatility whenever I see an oil report.
Exactly. It's certainly volatility.